So earlier I looked at success in numbers, and that meant trying to achieve a number. And I'm not just talking about money. I'm talking about even likes on Instagram. I'm talking about how many people turned up for my show, how many people posted about it. You know, it's just about people. It's about validation. And I think today for me, success is very different. It means doing, just having peace doing what I'm doing.
We could have never predicted the events of last year. And while many of the effects continue to be felt, we've learned to adapt personally and professionally. As a pastry chef, the way I approach my business has transformed tremendously. So I'm talking to entrepreneurs from various industries to follow their journeys, find parallels, and learn from their insights along the way. I'm Pooja Dhingra, and you're listening to my podcast, No Sugarcoat, where the sugar stays in the kitchen and out of the conversation. Today on No Sugarcoat, I'm talking to fashion designer and one of my dearest friends, Masaba Gupta. A fellow entrepreneur, she has built a fashion house from the ground up, starting at the age of 19. Now, if I had to list all her achievements so far, that would be the whole episode. She opens up about her childhood, how she failed at fashion school, and of course, like a truly good friend, gives out some top quality advice. Let's find out how she stays true to herself while still managing to be one of the most sought-after designers. I actually want to start with how we met.
Oh.
Because, yeah, do you remember?
Yeah.
Tell me.
So we met on Instagram. Yeah.
No, we met before Instagram, Masu.
We met because you were catering to my Juhu store, the first store I had the event.
Oh, yeah, wait, it was Instagram.
It was Instagram because I wrote to you and I said something.
So you were friends with one of my friends.
Nishka.
We had a common friend.
And she sent me a cake of yours on my birthday. And then I
with chocolate and raspberries. And this is now almost like 10 and a half, 11 years ago.
Yeah.
And then I made your birthday cake. And ever since then, I have been a fangirl ever since then. I still remember my friend got me this white rose print shirt from one of your stores
I
have.
Correct.
And then ever since then, I'm just in your life and you're in my life. And this is
we're on each other's Instagram.
We'll get to Instagram also in a bit. But I actually want to take... I know you've spoken about this a lot, but I just want to go through your childhood very briefly. And then, you know, because I know you so well, I don't want to skip and just jump to parts, which I eventually will end up doing.
Okay.
But let's start from the beginning.
My childhood is a very, I feel like it's one of those things that...
You're tired of talking about?
No, I'm not tired of talking about it. I'm just tired of people interpreting it in their own way. I think people, I've spoken about it so much that irrespective of that, the final question always is, but was it tough? But I just said it was not tough, you know? I mean, I just gave you that interview that it was actually great. So I think that's my issue with that. But I just think with respect to my childhood, I can't even like begin to tell you how normal it was. You know, in fact, it was so normal that a lot of people are shocked by it. So because of that, the idea of normal versus abnormal in my head is very different. And I'm also more accepting of various types of relationships or various types of people.
Correct.
Or the various things that people do. And I feel like I'm still living a part of my childhood, actually. And maybe all of us are, you know, because everything that you go through as a child, you don't really... Do you ever really overcome? Because every reaction that you have as an adult...
And I think it's very interesting because in your show, you had a mini Masaba.
Yeah.
And you had the little child who was going through all the different emotions. So every scene that you were going through or every like, was that the intention behind it?
Yeah, because I told the writers that, you know, I have a very childlike personality in a lot of the things I do. Even the way I run my business sometimes sounds crazy, but it's true. It's a good thing. I always kind of go back to the child in me, you know, and I noticed that I had to put that in the show because a lot of the things, you know, like the relationships you have, the kind of men that you're drawn to, the kind of lifestyle you pick, it's all dependent on, even the friends you make, it's all dependent on your childhood, you know. So we had to show Mini Masaba because I think all of us have this tendency to go back to the child in us whenever we have tough moments or whenever we have moments of victory, for example. And the other thing is that I find that it keeps me grounded, you know, to remember that I have a childlike side and that I do react to things like a child sometimes. It just reminds me that I'm grounded. I'm a normal person just doing a lot of things. So.
And I think that's extremely important, because my next thing is going to be talking about fame, right? You grew up with, you know...
Attention.
Yeah. What was that like for you? Or did it just become second nature?
You know, when you're growing up as a child with attention, you don't see that as attention. You just... And you don't see that as fame. And you don't see that as a great thing. You just see that as, okay, people are interested and there's lots of people around. And that's it. It's a very warped way of thinking. You don't see
Does it add any kind of pressure to who you are as a person or the decisions that you take?
No, not at all. Because like I said, as a child, you barely register anything that's happening around you, you know. Yeah, you do know your parents are important people. But that has nothing. You're just like, but I'm just going to play or like eat a burger, you know. They have to do all the work.
I love the baby videos that you
Yeah,
share.
I was just like, you know, falling down and like, a dance and like pee while I was dancing was the best time of my life.
And, doing jhadu
and like, you know, role play. I'm a sabzi wali one day, I'm something else one day. So I think that's how you live your life as a child. When you're a teenager, it starts to affect you. Because then you have this, you have peer pressure. You have friends who may be more famous or less famous. And I grew up with celebrity kids, you know, that word, celebrity kids. But I grew up with them. And everybody had, someone had a larger house. Somebody had a larger house, but a very warped set of parents, you know. And then somebody had a really nice set of parents, but nothing really, you know, no means to get by. So I think it was a very interesting, I grew up seeing life in a very, very interesting way.
So what keeps you stable and grounded at times like these? Like when you see, you know, in what you just described, when someone has so much more than you or someone has so much less than you, how do you keep yourself sane through all of this?
I don't think there's like a formula. It's something that kind of keeps changing. But I just remember I had a very normal parent to come back home to. And I think that kept me sane. And I had a very transparent parent. You know, I think the biggest mistake parents make is to shield their child a bit too much from something sometimes. And I was just given all the information that was out there in the world. So it was like, I'm a part of it. And that people know my story, so I have nothing to hide. And I can be myself. I think when you can be yourself, because you know that there's no secrets. That the world knows me for what it is. The world knows the nature of my parents' relationship or how I was born, whatever. It's fine, yeah. You have no baggage. So that's how I stay sane. I don't have any baggage. I speak my mind. You know that. I'm very open on Instagram. I'm open on social media. I give my interviews very candidly. I don't want to live two lives, you know. And I think that's how you stay sane. Who you are as a public person and who you are as a private person
has to match,
yeah.
Can you take us through how fashion happened for you?
It's really bizarre, but I don't think I ever wanted to be a designer. I was studying music. In a singing off tune
in
London.
Singing and dancing.
Yeah, I was singing off tune in London and learning vocals. And before that, I was with Shamak Davar dancing. And before that, I was playing professional tennis. So there have been so many things I've done. But then I came back from London and I wasn't in the mood to go back because I just felt lonely and I wanted to be with my family. And SNDT, my fashion college, was literally around the corner. And I was like in the car one day. My mom's like, you want to go? I was like, yeah, okay. She said, I think you make a great designer. I said, okay, I'll try it out. And I was thrown into it. I don't think I enjoyed the course very much. I was a bit miserable through it because there was just so much technical. And I was just somebody who, I'm not a geek. I'm somebody who wants to get down to business, you know. I remember having a great set of mentors. So Wendell was one. Who, you know, we had a set of teachers in college who were so hell-bent on teaching you the technicality that they almost didn't teach you to be spontaneous, you know. And then you had Wendell who just came and said, but you have to be spontaneous in the world. So one was preparing me for the books and one was preparing me for the world, you know. So that was how it happened. And I loved that. So at least there was a balance. And when I was 19, I started my own label, literally out of my house. Because I just said, I don't want this teacher to tell me that I can't do something because I failed a subject.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true.
Did you fail a subject?
Three.
Yeah.
I failed three. Not one.
And did that never... And did that never make you feel like you were not good enough? Or do you have that conviction that irrespective of this academic failure, I still have...
You know, I'll tell you a story. But when I was in my first year, we had this embroidery class Okay, and we had to get a t-shirt from our house and we had to do ribbon work on it. And I had never put a needle in my hand or like put a thread through it, and we had to do ribbon work. So I was like, I'm going to take a gray t-shirt and do neon ribbon work on it. Now, everyone in my class, we were a class of 35 or 40, they all did like, you know, very nice, delicate, earthy colors and conservative family type, you know, that kind of pattern. And I have done this one oversized flower in neon. And my teacher, I don't think I'll ever forget her, she was like, ye kya hai? And she gave me like a 3 on 10 or something.
Wow.
And I remember I took a pair of scissors, I went back to my desk and I just cut it and I ripped it and I threw it.
Was you that should end? Have saved it.
That's what I would tell people today. Hmm. But I didn't think of it then. And I just remember feeling so much rage for not being acknowledged because I didn't do something that the rest of the class was doing. You know, and from then on, I became a rebel. And I think that's the only time in my life I've been a rebel where I just said, I will do everything against the grain of this module, you know. And in college, there were so many moments where I would be bad at stitching. Like, you know, I would make a salwar, but the belt would be missing. So she's like, are you going to put it on?
I really want to go back to your teachers and ask them and be like, what do you think of
myself? I don't think they'd be talking to you. No, but there were a few who were very nice to me who saw the spark because they just knew I love designing, you know. And I just didn't like sitting on the machine and making a garment. I was very good at textual stuff, you know, like history of world costume I was great at. I was great at draping. So all that I could do, but I couldn't do accounts, so no. And then after that, I couldn't do like, oh, you know, Masaba, if this is 30 inches, 20 inches, do the math. I was like, bye. I've left the building, you know. So that was my problem. And today, I think I overcompensate. And I saw that how important it was.
Correct.
And which is why I think I spend more time trying to understand numbers.
So I still remember when you just started, I remember very clearly one of my close friends' mom went to your jewelry store and got a Masaba sari.
You know?
And it was like, I still remember, I think it was like 5 or 8 or 10,000, something like this. And she was like, I got this Masaba sari. And you started with saris, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you take me through your like journey with, you know,
saris?
Sari.
I remember my mom is a big shopper and she would take me along and we would go, you know, if there was a function or whatever, we would go and look at saris. And some, you know, the sales girl would come and say, this is this designer, that is that designer. I said, but I can't tell who's who. It all looks the same. It was the same. Like a dull gold or olive green with some zarika kaam on it, you know. And I said, Mom, you know, why wouldn't you wear a different sari, like something that was slightly offbeat? And that's when I started my label, I said, I'm going to do saris that are not, that haven't been done before, because I my only motive was to stand out in a shop.
Correct.
And I think when your motive is that you want to do, you want to stand out, you will always do something different, you know. And I started these saris, which was the palm print. And of course, Sonam wore it. And till Sonam wore it, it was the least performing garment or the piece in the entire brand history. Because people were like, net, aadha net. And there was no half and half sari that time. It was all one.
Correct.
So I was doing like a silk at the bottom and a net on top. And then a shocking orange border and another printed blouse. It was just wild, you know. And Sonam wore it for the Juhu store launch. And things just turned around from there. Because people said, oh, this is how it looks on a shape.
But going from wanting to stand out to then everyone copying this print.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
You know,
Give me the real answer now.
You know, taking a chance pays off.
Yeah.
I think taking a chance really, really pays off in some way or the other. I think people just saw Indian fashion in a new light. Because until then, there was only bridal. Indian fashion didn't have anything else. It was only bridal. So the idea of a print on a shirt or on a dhoti or on a top or on a sari was unusual. Mm-hmm. And I think it ushered, I'm only saying this, but it ushered in a new, now what to do, but it's true.
Queen of prints.
Well, I mean, I'm serious because it ushered in. I remember, I'll tell you, this happened to me with when I saw Manish Arora's work. Okay. And that ushered in at that time. The era of cool kitsch. Colors and kitsch. And the idea that you could wear neon green. You know, it was never a thing in India. So, I just think that people just like the freshness of it. They said, okay. And I'm telling you this, that it will die out.
Correct.
In the next decade or so, maybe.
Because people move to
the next thing. So that's the thing. But always doing something new and taking a chance always pays off.
No, it pays off. That's true. But my question is...
Professor.
So I'll tell you what happened with me, right? So when I started Love 15, same situation, right? There were not too many standalone patisseries. Then suddenly everyone was doing the same thing to the extent that when I opened my Bandra store, there was a lady who not only opened right next to me, you know, but copied, like stood outside my kitchen for 3 months, told my chefs, you know, to went to the same printer, did everything, and it almost looked like a cousin, you know,
cut copy paste.
Cut copy paste, but right next to me, right? And I remember being 24, 25 at the time.
I didn't know how to handle it.
And I just felt like you're trying to do something new, you're trying to do something different. And my mother used to sit me down and say that imitation is like, you know, the
form of flattery
and all these things, you know. And at 24, you're like, okay, fine.
But was it eating out of your business?
It had started to, because what would happen is that when we would run out of product, which eventually by 7, 8 in the evening we would. People would just go, you know, there. I mean, of course, it didn't last and it didn't, you know, stay and whatever. It eventually shut down. But dealing with that thing of, oh, I've done something great and someone has not only copied it exactly, you know, like...
That I built it and it's just become a...
Yeah, you know, like, I can't take credit for a red velvet cake. I can't take credit for a chocolate cake. But things that I have actually thought of, what do I call this? I named it like Dark Delight because I wanted to. Or, you know, like something like that. You've not only copied the exact name, the price, the everything.
But it's not insecurity. It's a downright plagiarism.
Exactly. So how do you deal with plagiarism?
You know, I'm thrilled with it. I'm actually somebody who in the beginning, like you, I had a lot of rage because I was like, how can you do this? It's ethically wrong, you know? And then after that, I said, well, it's not hurting me. It's actually making me a bigger person in the larger scheme of things. It's making the brand more recognized. It's obviously become not just about me anymore. It's become a trend. So it transcends me and the brand, right? Correct. So I saw it like that. I saw it as something that will catch on to the youth and then they will trickle down to us anyway. If there were somebody who was doing it at a cheaper price point, better product, had more availability and just basically checked all the boxes that I couldn't check, then I would be worried. But that hasn't happened yet. So I think I take it for what it is. I see it as something that... is important, you know. I think these things reassure you.
And my mom would always tell me, she's like, it's great, you know. And she would always say that they can only copy what you've done so far. They can't copy what you're going to do.
But I'll tell you something. Everything in the world that you can think of has been done.
This is true.
Okay, so I am not making the next pair of jeans, right? I'm not inventing the next pair of jeans. You're not inventing the next chocolate eclair. You and me are just recycling everything that has been done before. What we probably have been better at is making it fresh enough each time and reinventing in a new way. And that's what everybody is doing. Some people do it for shorter periods of time. Some people cut, copy, paste. And some people do it for life, you know. So that's the thing. I mean, the lehenga is a lehenga. It's just being done in 100
that's
different
a, that's
ways.
A good perspective. I want to now go to this one evening at Soho House.
Maybe. What have I done at Soho House?
Maybe like 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think you were newly single and I have been single.
Oh, so. Well, yeah. God, please, someone find Pooja Dheera a boyfriend.
Edit, cut that out. Please. Firstly, I've spoken to Joe about shooting wedding. Now I'm talking about, no, guys, this is not what this podcast is about.
Jackie thinks it's not going to be.
Yeah, he's not going to be happy. But we were sitting at this, I remember we were sitting at this cabana. We were eating french fries and having a drink.
Yeah, champagne. And I was having
You were having champagne. And both of us were going through some, you know, major like life anxiety in general. And I was talking to you about like, I don't know, I don't feel worthy enough, I don't feel this. And you had some own issues. And there was a moment where we looked at each other and we were like, people should see this, you know, people should see this. Because everyone just sees the lists and the everything else. And we both had a laugh about it. So I want to actually now talk about business and success and what it seems like from the outside.
You know, I have to say that I don't know who decided or who wrote this in some book that only if you're a serious person, a business person sitting in a suit out of a massive headquarters somewhere, you're supposed to be taken seriously.
Correct.
The rest are all chilling. I went to one meeting And it was many years, it was 10 years back, 8 years back. And it was very weird because I wasn't given the chance to speak. I came there to pitch for, or rather ask for advice, not even pitch. And I was a 22-year-old girl or something asking, or 21-year-old asking for advice, 2 years into running my own business. And I said, you know, I want to know what I should do right and how do I enter the retail space. And the answer was, you know what, you guys, you designers just party or want to be on pastry. Pastry was a thing that time. And you guys only want to, y'all are only doing this for the vanity. You want to come out of fancy cars. I said, but I just came out of a Zen, like a Maruti Zen is what I just came out of. And I'm sitting here humbly asking for advice.
Yeah.
And I wake up at 7 a.m. since I can remember, you know, and I can't stay awake after
you
10. So forget about
7:30, you're like, good night.
7:30, I'm like, good night, guys. I'm winding up and I don't have the energy to party. But, you know, designers in the past led a very extravagant life, and not all of them. And, you know, I'll tell you this, some of them led a party life, but they also did extremely good work in the hours that they did work. And most of them did. That's why we talk of them today, right? So I just think that somewhere for creative people, their reputation, the reputation of their entire industry precedes the work they do, you know, which is unfortunate. Because like I said, only if you go do an MBA are you serious about work. If I say I want to be a fashion designer, they say, but your hobby hai, shaadi karne tak you'll do it, then you'll move on. And I didn't see it that way. I never saw it that way. I just knew that whatever I do, passion is passion, but I must make money off it, you know. The unfortunate part about everything is that no matter how much work you do, no matter how good you are at something, you will always be questioned for, but, you know, we heard you party. I don't even party. I'm in pajamas all night, you know, all day. And
we only eat, guys.
We only eat food. And like, call me to a food thing at 7:30, I will arrive. But not after that, you know. And even otherwise, it doesn't matter. I could work 2 hours a day and do incredible work. I could work 16 hours a day and do crap just because I want to sit behind a desk and pretend that I'm working, you know. So I think that is something that we need to change. It's changing today, I think, in a big way, because you see entrepreneurs in different fields. But it's still difficult, yeah, to be taken seriously, because everyone looks at your age. Like, I remember when I was doing Fashion Week, sometimes I would be questioned about my age. How are you doing this at this young age? And you're so young. Can you handle this responsibility? You're so young. Do you understand that? I agree. I mean, it's fair. But I think all of us are learning. Even at 40, nobody knows everything, right?
Yeah. So I think that's one thing that I've learned and that helps me going is that nobody really knows.
You don't know anything even at 70.
Yeah. I mean, if people did, we wouldn't be in like the economic crisis that we are in today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or, you know,
big problems. Or be like, you know, be able to tied through everything. If everyone knew everything, we would have a manual and everybody would survive everything. But that's not the case.
What does success mean to you, Masaba?
Oh, dear God.
It's a hard one.
Yeah, because, you know, it mostly means peace. I know that it comes with its trappings of stress and anxiety and fear and doubt. But for me, I think success has to mean peace.
That's evolved over the years, right? Like, it.
Yeah, so earlier I looked at success in numbers, and that meant trying to achieve a number. And I'm not just talking about money, I'm talking about even likes on Instagram. I'm talking about how many people turned up for my show, how many people posted about it, how many people, you know, whatever. It's just about people, it's about validation. And I think today for me, success is very different. It means having peace doing what I'm doing.
And how did this change for you?
I definitely think it was the COVID period that changed this for me, because there was so much unrest. See, the thing is, you're never going to settle, right? As a person, you always want, as human beings, we're always chasing the next layer of happiness. And I just felt like during COVID, there was a time where I said, you know what? If I don't take care of myself and if I don't take care of my peace and my happiness, there is no money to be made. There is no success to be achieved. There is no employee that will be happy, because I go in with that energy into my business. And I know this is, sounds like a, something from a textbook or a quote on, you know, you, in the morning at 7 a.m. you post a quote on Insta. You're like, guys, from today, you know, it's like that. And I, you know, guys, this is it. Word, hashtag word. No, it's not that. It's just, I just feel like it's, it has to be an inner thing. And I'll tell you, there are people who are super successful and happy being, working like dogs and being unhappy doing it, but they're okay with it, you know. There are people who are very bored at their jobs and they're happy doing it. But I just think that as a creative individual and a creative entrepreneur, I have to be at peace, because only when I'm calm and I'm at peace will I do my best work and create a success story, is what I think.
How challenging is it for it to have your name? Would you do that differently if you could?
If your name is Masaba, I definitely would. I would. Yeah. I think, you know, I was very naive when I started. I didn't think of all these things. But no, I mean, I think today, I don't want to say, I don't want to diss it. I think it's gotten me to where it is. But yes, I would think of many options if I were to see a business plan later. But yeah, your name attached to it means that you involuntarily are the spokesperson forever. But my aim really is to, you know, detach the brand from the person so that the brand lives longer, not for anything else. And see, eventually the person dies. Dies as in, like, you know what I mean, right?
Guys, it's getting very cold. Yeah,
yeah, the person dies.
They're
the
all in PPE here. Yeah. People dying.
And, you know, things change, but the brand should live on.
Yeah.
So my, what I've done in COVID is I've created a brand book where, no matter where I am in the world, tomorrow I could get sick, touch wood, whatever, you know. I mean, anything could happen. But the brand shouldn't stop telling its stories.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What is one thing that you know now about different things that you wish you knew earlier? Okay, so we'll start with that. What is one thing you know now about leadership that you wish you knew earlier?
Control your temper. Be compassionate.
How do you deal with this temper at work?
When I was young, I couldn't. I was lashing out at everybody. And till today, I sometimes do. But it's gotten much, much better. I think you can't be a reactive person as a leader. You just have to be more active. So understand that your employees, the people who work with you, come with God knows what baggage to work, you know. And it's not always easy. So I think just to be able to get that message across without being, without losing your temper.
What's the one thing about love that you know now that you wish you knew earlier?
That it's not always sparks. It's not always friendship. But at any point, either one should balance out.
What is the one thing you know now about money that you wish you knew earlier?
Save like a bitch.
I think this has been the theme across the all save. These conversations. Save money, guys.
Save money for a rainy day and never, ever, ever take a loan from a family or a friend or a stranger. Always refrain from it, because debt is, it's a trap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About friendships.
That your friends are not perfect and each friendship doesn't fulfill everything in your life. So every friend fulfills a different, has a different role in your life. And respect them and honor them for that. Don't expect more.
And about fame?
Fame. Fame is very, very different from success. Famous people sometimes are not successful and vice versa. Fame is not everything. It's a part. It's like a ships in the night. What are those? Ships in the night. Passing ships in the night. Fame is like passing ships in the night. So don't be attached to it.
Okay. Wow, very good answers. I'm very impressed. Maso.
Yeah, nah. Yeah,
editor.
But can't apply in life. Giving gyan like this to every day.
What is the one advice that you keep giving people, but you wish that you could take it yourself?
Everything I said on this show. Every damn thing I
what
said.
What is the hardest one?
The hardest one is not to look at a professional failure as a personal failure.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's the biggest one.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Can you talk me through one professional failure that really impacted you and how you made it through it?
Definitely the stores I had to shut during COVID. I took it so badly that I pretended there was no pandemic. And my mother was like, but there is a global pandemic.
Yeah.
Topshop shut down. Who are you? You know? So, I mean, I just felt like, no, but I can't. It can't happen, you know. And I cried and I cried and I cried. And I looked at it as, I have failed as a business owner, you know. And every collection that doesn't do well, I take it personally, because I'm like, did I not work hard enough? Did I give it my all? Am I being selfish in my way of designing? So all that.
And then how do you break away from that? What tools have you kind of, you know, or how do you equip yourself to not do that? Or is that something that's a work in progress?
It'll always be a work in progress, because, I mean, I am my brand today, you know, and I will see everything personally. But I've slowly learned in the last 6 or 7 months to detach. And I think that only comes from spending time away from the brand. And thanks to the pandemic, I mean, physically, I had to spend time away and I learned that.
Same. I think for me as well, that was such a big learning.
Yeah.
What is one thing that you will never again do? Like, never ever.
I will never ever not trust my intelligence. I always doubted it. I always thought somebody else knew better. That
was been my lesson for last year.
Yeah. I always thought that. I always thought that my gut is stupid, that my inner voice is stupid, and that I have an emotional reaction to everything, because everyone told me you're an emotional person, you're a sensitive person. And I have realized that is my intelligence. Me being overly emotional is my intelligence. It's what's got me here today.
What would be three things that you would tell a young girl setting up her own business today?
I think the first thing would be that set a financial goal for yourself. You know, there's no need to constantly pump money into something just because you have it or your parents have it. Always set that boundary. And from there on, you take that decision. So it's a very hard boundary to set because it's endless. But set it at the beginning and give yourself time to be able to achieve that. And the second thing would be that don't try and micromanage. There's a reason you don't have to do the same thing your whole life. You have to delegate and keep evolving. And that's how people around you evolve as well. So do that. The third thing would be that it's no joke. It's not like, you know, you can't take a day off. You can't. When you run your own business, you think you have a Sunday off, or you think you have less work today, you have two less calls today. But remember, your mind is always working. So you're not having a day off. If you're thinking about it, you're working.
Which is constant.
Because it's not a 9 to 5. You're not like, tala pakda ke le lo chabi, you know, watchman, bye. It's always there, you know. So it's, I think, remember that. You're not going to have a day off. Your mind will always be working. But learn to quieten your mind sometimes.
Can we talk about social media now?
Oh, my favorite topic. Yes. My followers are not growing. They're dropping. People are unfollowing me.
What role does social media play in your life, Masu?
I see it as, I actually love it. In the middle, I remember I was like, you know, I wanted to take a break for 10 days or something, not to be on social media. And I remember I couldn't because my brand was like, Masaba, no, one new outfit is there. No, something. Sale banner has swipe up and all. So I said, okay, fine. Okay. You know,
it's pressure, right?
It's pressure, but I don't ever want to diss social media because it's made me and the brand.
So I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
Because also I feel that Love 15 and me are so closely linked, right? Like a big part of me also for the future is how do I disassociate the two? And the only reason I could go off social media when the pandemic started for 10 days and I just went off everything because I wanted to.
Yeah.
Was because I didn't have anything to sell. I didn't have anything to say. You know, I wanted to kind of just go inside and kind of think of my own thoughts of myself.
So I want to ask you this. Can a person actually reflect? Because I don't think you can.
Yeah, man. You can.
Can you go inwards?
You have to. Like, you can. You definitely
I
can.
I think if you're outwards, you reflect more.
Yeah, please explain.
I don't think that, you know, this thing of I'm taking a, I've been recharged. I've never been recharged. Have you ever been recharged? I don't know how it works.
I don't think it's about being... So for me, what happened was for so long, it was just no stopping, right? There was no rest.
Like on a treadmill.
Yeah, there was no rest. So it was just go. So for me, it was pause. which was great, and it was perspective, and it was also asking myself a lot of questions, you know.
Okay, what I meant was that I can never pause by actually pausing.
How do you pause?
I have to be on that treadmill constantly to be able to.
But you pause from doing one thing and you divert your attention to doing something else. That's
no.
Normally.
My most strongest time in my life where I've actually had the best reflection of sorts is when I've been multitasking.
So, give me an example.
Like they say, right, on the middle of a Tuesday afternoon is when you'll have that, your bulb will go off and you'll find that thing. I just think that when I'm saying, okay, now I'm in the Maldives and I will look at the blue ocean and I will recharge.
Yeah, that doesn't happen. That doesn't.
Because I'm just like, oh my God, like Juhu did not have good sales this month. Can I post something from here? Do I have an outfit in here?
Yeah.
You know, that's what you keep thinking.
Yeah.
But I think when you're, like when I, yesterday, when I had, I think I did 16 calls yesterday, back to back. And in the middle of those, one of them, I had a 15-minute break and I found my answer as to what I need to do for the business. That's what I mean. And I was looking for it through the lockdown because I said, now I have time to reflect. I'm not going to office. Everything is closed. I didn't get it.
So for me, it was not so much as pause and look for the answer. For me, it was like your back is against the wall. You have no other options.
Yeah.
Where do you go from here?
Yeah.
So that was kind of like, you know, necessity, sort of mother of invention. Okay, now we can't do this. What can we do now?
Yeah, I agree.
And
with
then
that.
Kind of build from there. But this, I agree with you that this, let's go to a beach. And
like,
let's
and you know, like they say, right? Luck has to find you working hard.
Yeah.
You're not just going to be like sitting on a beach and sipping a cocktail and saying, oh, I think I found my next collection.
Yeah.
Not like that.
But do you believe in luck? Do you believe that a lot? What is your...
I think that I believe in luck so much because my Netflix show, for example.
Yeah.
I think it was meant to come out way before the lockdown. Yeah. It got delayed. And just at the time when we were at our hardest in the business. And I'm talking about like, close to zero sales because everything in the world is shut. Yeah. Stores are closed. Everything is closed. And this show came out and it just kicked things.
Changed everything.
Yeah. So I do believe in luck. I think in order to be successful, there's so many things that need to fit.
What do you think your purpose in life is?
Are you
purpose in life? I'm trying to ask her a serious question and she's just gone. Do you think about it at all?
No. Why do you think? I think your purpose in life keeps changing.
Agree.
I'll tell you the one purpose I do have is to try and be in a constant state of, and I'm talking about peace so much because I really believe in it. I think peace is the starting point for miracles, literally. And I really want to achieve that in my life at any given point of time. But what I wanted from life, my purpose when I was 20 as opposed to now when I'm 32 is very different. And maybe when I'm 35, it'll
change. You're only 32?
Yeah. Guys, I was the youngest at everything.
So then what is the big picture for you, Masu?
I'm really, really kicked about the brand right now. I'm really kicked about, I can see, like, you know, when you start seeing different paths, because I've never tried to limit, I've never seen myself as somebody who wants to limit myself to one thing. I want to do multiple things. And I know a lot of people diss me for that, but I want to do multiple things. I'm good at so many things and I want to achieve as much, like, you know, you want to juice life as much as you can. So I think that's the big picture, to go through life with as less crying as possible.
But we have Mari biscuit and vanilla ice cream.
But we have Mari biscuit and vanilla ice cream.
Only people knew how much we cry.
I tell you. And just to go through life with as much peace as possible and try and achieve great things. Yeah.
It's amazing. Thank you.
And I lead a very peaceful family life. Huh? I'm big like that.
Kids and everything.
Punjabi, yeah.
I forget you're Punjabi sometimes.
I'm very Punjabi. Sonam has not told us. Sonam is convinced I'm a Punjabi auntie. I'm telling you guys, please go through life peacefully. Do not be on a treadmill. Like, do crazy things. Push yourself. But please achieve peace first. It's the starting point of everything.
That was Masaba Gupta in conversation with me, Pooja Dhingra, on No Sugar Coat. By the way, Lure 15 now delivers across India, so go get your sugar fix at lure15.com.